Major Hun, Reel 48. You're saying that the farmers would provide you with food and other things in exchange for rations and so on. Yeah.
Well, it was a good thing. It gave us a change of diet.
Mm.
It built up friendships with the local farmers, mm. and they enjoyed the change of diet.
Mm.
And it gave us a, as opposed to us cooking our own on a number two cooker,
mm.
of the same old thing, a meal cooked in a farmhouse, you know, it was a little luxury, really.
Were they able to carry on with their farming as normal by that stage?
Well, I think at that stage when we were there, there probably wasn't a lot of farming to do. Mm. The conditions were bad,
mm.
You know, weather-wise. A lot of the ground was waterlogged.
Mm.
I didn't see any sign of animals apart from Galini.
What are Galini?
Guinea fowl. And that type of thing, nothing, and geese, but I didn't see any cows or anything, so I think probably, I'm not sure if that area was noted for grape, which might have been...
Could be that it was mainly wine growing.
Yes, I don't think there was any... I don't think there was a cattle area at all, no signs of it. So I don't know what else they would live on, really.
But I mean, it sounds as though you weren't too close to the enemy, or the enemy weren't too active if the civilians were above.
The river was such,
mm.
there was space, a bit more space than normal.
So they were on the other side, the enemy had,
well away, I think.
So the enemy had retired across the river by this stage, hadn't they?
Yes.
How wide was the river at that point, or in that area?
Try to hazard guess. 50 to 100 yards.
Mm.
It wasn't terribly wide, but there was quite a lot of water in it because of the floods. It was a good obstacle anyway.
So you weren't expecting them to?
No, no. And I think at that stage they weren't sort of... I wouldn't have done them a great deal of good.
Mm.
To have come across, because they knew the force that they would meet. They might have taken some prisoners or done a bit of damage, but it wouldn't have been to a great advantage, really, to have come across that, as they were withdrawing all the time. And as I say, we took over. The 44th Recce Regiment took over from our task then. I haven't come across them before, so I'm not sure what they really consisted of.
Were they in armoured cars like you, or were they in some other sort of vehicle?
That type of thing. They were a reconnaissance regiment, so I think they would have been equipped more or less the same and then we had a bit of a rest. And,
now, by now, the weather must have been getting pretty
cold
and miserable because you're in November, December. Did you have any clothing issue to help you with the winter conditions?
No, we never did, really. We always seemed to have the same thing. You might have got a cardigan, a jerkin. If you've got a jerkin, I mean, we're really sort of being well looked after now, but there are no type such as winter clothing at that stage. I think they got it a little bit later, but on the whole, we were very poorly equipped for cold weather.
Was there anything you could do to mitigate the effects and keep yourselves
not warm? Not a lot. I think we got hardened to it, really. Of course, this was then the beginning of December.
Yes.
December when we were. And then we. Again, we were relieved by the Recce Regiment. Then we had a short period when we took over from the Canadians again in the infantry role.
Sounds as though they were just swapping you around, stopped you from getting too bored with any particular task.
And then it was around about this time in we were doing this on and off right throughout December. So just about 3 or 4 days before Christmas, before Christmas Day, the colonel sent for me again and said, I want you to take commission. And I said, no, I didn't want to go. And so he said, well, you jolly well are. You're going whether you want to or not. You know, this is, we're short of officers, and we're going to be short of officers, and we need officers, therefore you will go to a war for second board. So I couldn't argue with him, Colonel Saville. And so
but was your objection the same as before?
Yes, I just didn't want to be the regiment. I thought I was doing a good job. And the less chance of being coming back to the regiment. Yeah, that was the thing, while the war was on. I mean, when the war was finished, that's a different matter, I think. But you know, when you've been fighting with the same people right through 4 years nearly, you know, it's hard to sort of leave them.
Were there a lot of the same people still left and still in the regiment?
Oh yes, yeah, quite many. So he said, right, you will go. So together with the RSM, John Thurston, Sergeant Tinney, who had been doing troop leader, Sergeant Turner, who had been doing troop leader, and Sergeant Kane, who'd been doing troop leader. They'd all been doing troop leader's jobs as sergeants. And we were sent to Naples. Well, we got on the train, or it was you know, one of these cattle car type things, you know. About, was it 40 men, or 8 horses, or 12 horses? And we left Rimini. And we started our trip down to Naples. And we kept stopping in sidings, and we had our rations with us, and we had to cook it in this. We had a blanket each and slept in these trucks. It wasn't very warm, and we shuttled down, and every so often we'd stop at the, when we stopped, we'd run down to the train and with the kettle or brew pot. With tea in it, and he'd put steam into it, and you'd heard that from the training. And you, so you'd have a brew of tea. And I think it took us 3 days to get down to Naples.
This is the five of you all riding together.
Yeah, all together, you see. In this, and we got to Naples, and we went to the War Office Selection Board, which was just on the outskirts of Naples, to do our tests and whatnot, and we were 3 days there, and one of the days was Christmas that we spent doing the different, all much the same as I think they do today, you know. You had your physical, academic, mental, all those sort of different tests, pretty all the 3 days were completely taken up with all sorts of different tests, escaping from a prisoner of war camp, doing all this sort of thing. I found it very interesting anyway. And on Christmas Day we had to give a concert, and everyone had to get up and give a little sketch or something or other in front of all the staff of the. And I felt sorry for one man from the, I think he was a clapper, and he got up on the stage, and you know, you could feel for him. He was telling all the smuttiest jokes one could think of. You know, jokes, I mean, I didn't find funny. They were crude, they were. You know, if it's a subtle joke, people would have a laugh and enjoy. But he was going on and on and on. And you could look along there and you could say, well, he failed without any doubt at all. You know, which was sad for him, I thought, really.
What was your party piece?
Well, I, as a boy, always used to learn by heart, hear it two or three times, and learn it by heart, almost straight away, the Stanley Holloway monologues, Albert and the Lion, The Return of Albert, and all those. I can go through all those. And so I think, right, I'll, you've heard Stanley Holloway, so this is nothing like him, but I gave him the monologue, you see, which, you know, was all right, it was clean, it was something I could do, and felt happy with. And each one sort of gave his little thing. But the one which I always remember now was the very sad that this sergeant gave all these.
And was this regarded as one of the tests? This
well, I suppose it was. Mm. I had to get up and do something
in public.
Yeah, yeah. And so I was quite happy doing that, because this thing I always used to. As soon as a new record came out, I think you could go and buy it for sixpence at Woolworths.
Yes.
And I could learn it, listen to it two or three times, and I knew them all. Mm. Like every one of the monologues.
Mm.
And I used to still, when the children in the car, you know, when we were going on holiday, Albert and the Lion, Dad, or Return of Albert, and all those, Sam pick up the musket, and all those.
Do you remember which one you did for the people at Naples?
Yes, Albert and the Lion.
Oh. Not Sam, Sam, pick up my musket.
Not Sam, Sam, pick up the musket, no. But then I did The Return of Albert, you know, which is, Sam, pick up the musket might have been not accepted so much. So anyway, that was all right. And then we finished it, and the next day they gave us our results, you see, and I had passed, which was a relief in a way. I mean, to know that you had passed and not sort of failed, I think. Mm-hmm. And the RSM passed, and Sergeant Tinney passed. But the other three, who had been troop leaders, they all failed. Mm-hmm. So they all went back to the regiment.
Did you envy them?
Well, in a way I did, but in another way I thought, well, you know, it's another, the colonel said, I've got to go. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that was good enough. And the fact that I passed was good enough for me to think it'd been awful if I'd have failed and gone back to the regiment as a failure, you know, from the colonel's point of view, that he'd put his faith in me to pass and I'd let him down. That would have been a thing I would have hated. So, I was had to wait. I didn't go back to the regiment then. I was then shipped off
straight away
mm. back to England on SS Australia.
So, did she sail from Naples or
from Naples? Mm. Yeah. And so that was.
What was that voyage like?
Very comfortable. Mm. Very, very good. Sort of more or less a peacetime voyage.
Mm. No alarms or anything like that on the route.
It was the Empress of Australia that was going back. And of course, after I'd left, the regiment then led the New Zealand division until the end of the war. And B Squadron were the first of the Allied units to enter Venice. And then Chiesti, and in fact Matt Abraham took the he signed for the city of Chiesti in a book, and apparently he still got it. He hadn't handed it over yet, you know, which was great. And when the war ended, our casualties were, I don't know what they were exactly in France, probably about 30 or 40, I suppose, in France. But on the desert, it was 22 officers and 196 other ranks. And in Italy, it was 16 officers and 134 other ranks. And almost every armoured car or Stuart car commander suffered the experience of having at least one armoured car shot from under him and being destroyed. It was quite a thing. Mm. But I was only sort of speaking from B squadron in my experience, not so much any other squadron, apart from the odd incidents that I heard about, mainly B squadron.
Where did you actually land when you got to England?
Liverpool.
Mm. Now you've been
Liverpool?
Could have been Liverpool.
Wait a minute.
Or Southampton.
No, it wasn't Southampton. No, we sailed up the Clyde.
Ah, Greenock then.
Yes, I think that's where it was. Mm. We sailed up the Clyde. I remember it was early morning, dawn, and we sailed up the Clyde, and it was a beautiful scene to come up there. And we'd had a lovely voyage back, and we sailed up the Clyde, and I then had to... I had some leave to come, and I think I had to report to Bobington, and then from there I went to the pre-op too, which was a bit frightening for me, at Sandhurst, in the new building, building, and of course, having sort of gone there as a WO2, I was put on the square then as a cadet, the pre-op too, and you started as though you'd never been in the army before.
Mm. What, what impression did England make on you when you arrived? You got in at Fire the Clyde and then off you went. Now, you'd been away from England for...
Four years.
I mean, was it as you had expected, or did it differ
really.
In any way?
I don't think I was terribly excited or anything like that. It was just a stage in my life when, I'll come back for this and that, but I don't think I was terribly excited. I didn't have any, apart from... I had no mother, no father to come back to. All my brothers were in the forces. I had two sisters. I had no girlfriend or any attachment that way in England at the time, because I hadn't formed any before I went. Or a few girlfriends, but they weren't sort of very sincere type of friendship. They're just friends, but I don't think I was terribly excited.
But I mean, did anything strike you about the condition of the country in general, if it had changed since you'd left it?
Not really. No, I think there was anything that that was terribly outstanding. Really, I mean, people seemed much the same, normal. Didn't see any sort of signs that they'd suffered a great deal. And once I got into the Octu.
You said your first thing that it was pre-Octu. How long did that last?
3 months. That meant you went back on square.
Yep. What was it like, recruit training?
Recruit training.
Yes.
And I also remember the RSM was RSM Ford. I think Ford. He later took over as anything or tools in charity. It's been a prisoner of war, I think, some stage. If I said, right, I think his name is Ford. I'll think of it. If it's not right, I'll think of it later. And Brand was in the old building.
Yes.
And I started off, as I say, on the square as a recruit, doing foot drill, arms drill, being shouted at, hold that rifle straight, sir, and all that. But it was great, really, and you just had to knuckle down that you weren't a WO any longer. You were the same as everybody else, and you were treated, which was as it should be, I think. You couldn't go there with any advantage on anybody else at all.
What were the other chaps in your course like, your intake? What sort of backgrounds had they come from? Had they come from regiments as NCOs?
Some had come from regiments, some were Canadian. There was two of them that were from my regiment who were in my same...
These are the two who'd gone to Naples, were they?
Right, the RSM and Sergeant Tinney. There were a couple of Canadians. There was two or three from university. There was Jerry Carrington, whose father had commanded the regiment, and he'd come straight as a young boy.
Straight from school?
Straight from university.
A university.
There was, I think he'd come from university anyway. There was a chap whose father was there, Marshall or something. There was Tony Lauder, who was the Earl of what's the boxing
Queensbury.
Not Queensbury, the other. I know it's the Marquess of Queensbury, but
yes.
Lord Lauder's got the biggest estate up in Durham in that area. The Lauder Estates and that. Anyway, he was in it. So they were all sort of people who were then going on to, two or three of them went into my regiment.
How many of you were there in the intake, do you know?
I should say that in ours was somewhere around about 15, 20.
In the squad?
In the squad, yeah. And of course there was some above them that came in later. I'd say there was quite a mixed people. There was at least three who went to our agent whose fathers had either commanded or were in. There was Air Vice Marshal, there was one chap who was in the tank corps who'd come, I'd say, rather the same as me. So there was quite a mixed crew. And we all seemed to go on quite well.
You said that it was like being a recruit again, and that you did you started off with basic foot drill and so on. What else was in the syllabus for pre-octo?
You then went on to radio training, tank training. You did your PT, you did all the PE tests, you did your 10-mile bash. And all that sort of thing in the 3 months. You went on map reading exercises and you did everything sort of so that you could then go into a troop rather than cars.
Did you do tactics at all in the pre-auction?
Not to any big extent. We did that at the main auction with the actual tanks and things.
So the pre-auction was 3 months. And if this was basic recruit training, did it differ from what you had done when you had joined the army and done your first session of recruit training?
Not really, although it improved a lot.
Where did it improve?
You've come up to date a bit more.
Aspects?
The foot drill was normal.
Yeah.
And your rifle training was normal, your ranges. But then you went on to... radio wireless sort of training, which you didn't get when you were unless you specialised in a regimental training, and your machine gun stuff was, you didn't get that unless you specialised. And you got a rough idea, you did driving on a one-ton truck and the maintenance on that, which you didn't get as a recruit unless you specialised. So you did all that sort of thing in the 3 months. And you did map reading a bit more than you did as a recruit, unless you then became a troop NCO or commander. So it's much the same, but a bit more improved and a higher level.
You'd done a lot of work on wireless, hadn't you?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, how did the training and the pre-octu compare with what you'd done in the regiment when you were signal sergeant?
I could master it a lot more because I'd done the instructor's course, you see, so it gave me an advantage on that. But the thing was still much the same. You had your voice procedure and not so much of the fault finding as I had done with mine. So the basic training was much the same, very strict. You know, there's you couldn't get away with anything. If you stepped out of the line, then you'd get not defaults as such, but you'd get a task given you at the weekend on a Saturday afternoon when you would like to get away, and you were treated just like a young soldier, no matter what rank you had been or anything like that. You were still, shall I say, which was a good fair system really, because that had been unfair to the other people. If I'd have been, or even the RSM would have been with the regiment, they'd got special treatment, it wouldn't have been fair to the rest of the intake.
What about the PT? How did you find that?
Oh, I found that very good. In fact, when I was at Sandhurst, I used to be a mile runner and 3 mile runner and that way. I did the mile in 4:20 at Sandhurst when Sidney Wooderson's record was 4:08. And I did that in plimsolls and the army socks and the other heavy arm. The blue shorts that they are.
Vest PT.
That's right. And I did that in that because I was fit. My word, they made sure you were fit. You did all the obstacle courses, PT, the 10 mile bashes, and in fact, in the main building, we did the 20 mile bash when you had to do the 20 miles with a pack on your pack and then do the 20 mile and then come back and fire on the range. So, you know, it was tough, but I enjoyed it. It was really, you know, good hard work. And I didn't mind it. I mean, it's, after all, it was what the army's all about, isn't it? You know,
did everyone pass on the pre-octu? Did you?
Yes, I think they did. I don't think there was anybody who dropped out. I think some dropped out on the main octu.
But not the pre-octu?
No, I don't think anybody that I can think of who dropped out on the...
You said you had Saturday afternoons off. Was that the only time you had to yourself and Sundays?
Unless there was a church parade. But you were free. Normally you could get away for the weekend if you wanted. And of course, you had all your kit to...
clean
it had to be a pretty high standard as well.
Did you have a sports afternoon during the week?
Yes, we also had, I think Wednesday was a sports afternoon where you could play whatever game you wanted, but you all took part. And when the case was a sports afternoon, you can go and lay on your bed and sleep, and then you were either playing hockey, you were playing either football or some such sport. So made sure everybody was involved, and everybody was pretty fit, and they were all terribly keen, especially all the young new lads were very very keen. And
Were they keener than the veterans, do you think, or?
Well, they gave that impression they were keener than us. Mm. You know, perhaps I think we sort of took it in our stride.